This is something new, because we now actually have a staff on the Dino Nation blog, so I felt the need to include the staff in the audio stuff we do. And to kick this off, we have Anas Ahmed to join us for the first ever DMB staff interview. I don't know what we're actually going to call this. We'll figure something out. But welcome, Anas, and have said this in writing, but welcome to the Dino Nation blog, and thanks for being a part of what I'm doing.
Hello, James. I'm a big supporter, and I'm a big fan, and I'm not just saying that because I work for you.
That's true, because, you know, that wouldn't get you very far. I mean,
no one likes a kiss-up.
No, it doesn't work out too well. But let's get into some talk, and being the benevolent boss that I am going to let you pick the topic that we will talk about first. We're going to talk some NBA, and we're going to talk some Raptors. So which would you rather talk about first, Raptors or NBA?
I think we should start it off with some general NBA talk, just because that's the now. That's the current stuff going on right now. So I think we should kick it off with some playoffs talk.
All right. So you're pointing out the fact to the fans that the Raptors did not make the playoffs.
Yes. Yeah. Also, yeah. This is a Raptors blog, but let's face it. I think that we should give credit to where credit is due, and it's the teams that actually made the big dance, and not the team that consistently for the last 7 years with Chris Bosh hasn't made it, with the exception of two seasons. But let's focus on the now. How about that?
Okay, I think we'll have some ammunition for later, but let's get into it. Let's go with today then. Rajon Rondo, absolutely amazing. The Boston Celtics tied with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cleveland Cavaliers are my pick to win the NBA Finals. Should I be worried about the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I think you have to be. You know, I picked them to go to the finals, and there I had them losing to LA. But you know what? The fact that Boston is hungry, it seems that Boston, you know, the sleeping giant has woken up. I mean, Rajon Rondo, if you had asked me 3 weeks ago, and he's one of those guys for me that I constantly forget in my top five point guards. And the fact that he had a game like this, and I was reading an article online that the fact that there were only two other players that have put up those kinds of numbers ever in the NBA. Oscar Robertson and Wilt Chamberlain. And now he's keeping that kind of company. I still have Cleveland winning this series, maybe in seven, because of LeBron James, but you got to be worried if you're a Cavs fan. The Celtics are hungry. They have their eyes on the prize, and I don't know. If any team can beat them, it's this version of the Boston Celtics. They're not washed up like I thought they were.
Although that being said, isn't it kind of odd that I would say, and this is my opinion, but I think Rajon Rondo has surpassed the entire Big Three now, and I'm not sure if that's necessarily a good thing for Boston.
You know, it's good and bad, because, you know, 4 years ago, or whenever they put the team together, was it 3 or 4 years ago?
This is the end of year three.
The end of year three, sorry. You know, everyone was saying that Rondo had to step up, Rondo had to be the facilitator, and he was just... Can he even manage to be an average point guard at that time? They were just wondering, they just need someone who's average to go with that big three. And I think it's actually a good thing, because, you know what, they are approaching the end of their career. And at the end of it, they have you can argue that I would say that he's more of a franchise player than a Chris Bosh right now, because he's potentially a superstar point guard. And you know what, KG is almost at the end of his run. Ray Allen, his jump shot is as wet as it's ever been, but he's almost at the end of his run, and Paul Pierce has been dealing with injuries. So, I mean, they do got one good run left in him at least, and I think it's a good thing to have a guy like this that's only kind of starting out his career. He seems like he's a grizzled veteran, but I think it has to be something they're smiling about.
I've always liked Rajon Rondo, and the one thing that we can agree on, he is much better than Jose Calderon, which at some point Raptor fans would actually have made that argument.
Yes, they would have, you know, and he does it on both ends of the ball, which I think is critical.
And yes, Jose Calderon does not know anything to do with defense that Rajon Rondo plays.
I remember a few years back when they played the Celtics, and I guess Jose had one of the games he had hit the winning layup or something, and that was when all that talk started. Oh, that he's better than Rondo, that the Celtics would be so much better if they had Jose Calderon. Not so much. Not anymore.
No, you know, hey, what can you do? But, you know, the one team that everyone seems to be so excited about is the team that I picked to go to the NBA Finals when no one picked them last year. That's the Orlando Magic. And I'm not as excited about them this year as everyone else seems to be, because really, who have they played? The Atlanta Hawks have been brutal in this series, and no offense to the Charlotte Bobcats, who I did pick to make the playoffs, they weren't much of a challenge either. So is Orlando for real, or do we know yet?
You know, I got to give them credit. I do agree that they haven't faced the competition that the other big teams have. You know, you won't see it so much with the Lakers this series, but they have been. Utah has given them a run, and Oklahoma almost beat them. Yeah, they lost in six, but let's face it, Oklahoma gave them a good run. But in terms of Orlando, I think that when it gets down to it, you know, you get to the third round and to the finals, the rotations tighten. Coaches are playing fewer players, and the fact that they haven't faced stiffer competition is going to be to their benefit, because their guys are going to be a little fresher. I mean, it's likely that they sweep Atlanta. I mean, you beat a team by 40, and then last game you beat them by 30. It's a walk in the park for them, and I think their key players are going to be fresh, and I think that's going to play to their benefit. And you know what, for me, it's not so much that they haven't faced stiff competition. I just still, maybe it's the Raptors fan in me, but I don't know what Carter is going to bring you in a third round series, because we've never seen it before. And which version of Vince Carter are you going to get?
Well, Vince hasn't been a big factor in this series at all when you really look at him.
But he hasn't really had to be, right? But when you go up against the elite, when you go up against whether it's Cleveland or Boston in the next series in the finals, whether it's Phoenix, San Antonio, which doesn't seem likely, or the Lakers, Carter, in my opinion, is going to have to step up. He's going to be the difference between this year's team and last year's team. He is a better player than Hedo, whether anyone likes to agree with that. He is a better player than Hedo, and I think he's going to have to step it up. I think without him, whether he's done it in the first and second round, he's going to have to step up, and that's where I think whether or not Orlando's the real deal, it's going to fall squarely on Vince Carter's shoulders.
And if there's any Orlando fans listening, you should be fearful of that. And let's flip to the other side of this series, because two things interest me on the Atlanta side of this. One, Joe Johnson has been hyped up as this B-level free agent right below Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron James. He has been god-awful these playoffs. So what happens with him for free agency, and does this hurt his chances? And then the second thing, Mike Woodson has clearly been embarrassed and outcoached by Stan Van Gundy, who, incidentally, we're not going to talk about this, but one of the most underrated coaches, I think, in the NBA, Stan Van Gundy. Does Mike Woodson have a job if this series goes down in four games, which I agree with you. I can't see any way Atlanta wins a game in this series.
Even if they do win a game, or if it ends in five, I don't see Woodson having a job, because it seems like, had there been a better coach out there, I personally think that Atlanta would have went after a better coach or a bigger name, because Woodson's he's kind of forced their hand. Like, he's kept the team competitive. They've been one of the better teams in the East, so they had no excuse to fire him. And I think now they finally have their excuse. I don't see him there next season, because whether or not they lose Joe Johnson in free agency, I don't see a guy that's given up. He's 40 points. You lose in a playoff game by 40 points. There's no way you can justify that. It's absolutely disgusting. It's an embarrassment on the game. And then the fact that two games later you lose by 30. That is disgusting. It's unacceptable. I mean, when the Raptors lost to Atlanta by 40 or whatever it was earlier in the year, everyone was calling for Jay Triano's head, and that was in the regular season. Imagine what Atlanta fans are calling for Mike Woodson in the playoffs.
Well, I've been doing that whole series live blogging for The Score, and the Atlanta fans were booing throughout that 30-point loss. It is an ugly scene, but you know what? That being said, who are those fans in Atlanta? Because that looks like a library most of the time, and all these bandwagon jumpers, that's what you get, bandwagon jumpers in Atlanta. Yeah.
And you know, I think that's another thing with Atlanta. I was talking to a couple of my friends the other day, and we were basically saying that when Orlando was up 2-0 and it was going back to Atlanta, I said, that's no type of home court advantage. I don't care if they're getting up for games now. It's never been a it's not where, like in Utah, where you can actually argue that they have a home court advantage, because they do when they go to back to Utah. But Atlanta, I don't care if it's a packed house even, because they're just showing up. They're just Johnny come latelys. And I think there's no real home court advantage when you play in Atlanta. And that's something that upsets me when you think of like a team like Vancouver, that if you were to put a team, and I know this is besides the point, we won't go there, but if you put a team like Atlanta's in Vancouver, it will be a much bigger like difference in the crowd.
Yeah, and I mean, Atlanta just traditionally, we're not going to get into this too much either, but Atlanta's a terrible sports town. I mean, the Braves, the Falcons, all of it, they've always been a terrible sports town, and I think they always will be.
Yeah. It even extends to the Thrashers in the NHL. It's just not the type of city that, I mean, I understand if players want to play there, because, you know, it is in the South and a lot of NBA players are from the South. So I understand it's a there's nice weather there, even though it snowed there this year. But outside of that, I wouldn't want to play there in terms of the atmosphere inside of the arena.
Yeah, it's pretty dead. Much like the way the Hawks played, so it's kind of fitting. Anyway, let's move across to the Western Conference. And the LA Lakers, you mentioned briefly about their struggles with the Oklahoma City Thunder, but no struggles with the Utah Jazz. I mean, same old script, Utah, LA, LA's better.
Yes, there's not much more to be said. They're too big up front, as Hubie Brown has reminded us several times. But they're just... I mean, I've said it from the beginning of the season, and I always laugh at predictions because, you know, it's really a crapshoot. You don't really know what's going to go down in the season. But with LA, I've always felt that they were built for the playoffs. They were built for a championship run, despite their limited struggles in the season and the fact that they didn't dominate as thoroughly as the Cavs did. They're built for a championship. They're Ron Artest, he's an upgrade over Trevor Ariza. They're not even in the same class. If you want to talk about off-the-court antics, that's one thing. But Ron Artest is the better player, definitely on the defensive side of the ball. And I just think Utah outclassed them. And I think the Lakers would have had a harder time with Denver. But I think it's really – the true test is going to be next series, because I, for one, haven't given the Phoenix Suns any credit this entire year. I didn't think they were the real deal at the beginning of the year. I didn't think they were the real deal when they started playing defense. I didn't think it would last. But they've proven me wrong. I mean, they're up against old reliable, and they're up 3-0. I mean, it's crazy what they're doing right now. So I still think LA is built for the long run, but they're just gonna have a tougher time with Phoenix than they've had against Utah.
And by the time people are listening to this, Phoenix may have already been the first team to get into the conference finals, but we don't know yet because we're actually taping this as the game goes on. As the one thing, though, you mentioned Artest actually, when you think about it, other than some funky hairstyles and setting up a marriage, really hasn't done a lot in LA, like wacky or weird.
No, he's been, I mean, aside from showing up to I think it was the Conan O'Brien show half naked, but outside of that, he's been great. He's been a welcome sight.
Isn't that like a normal Friday night for Ron Ron?
Yeah, that's true. But on the court, I mean, he hasn't caused any trouble. I mean, he almost punched Joey Graham, but he realized that was one of the guys in the league that could probably take him. Your guy, Joey G.
I'm a big Joey Graham fan. Everyone knows that.
Oh man, but I think that he's gonna be the difference. They throw him on if they face LeBron in the next round. They'll throw him on LeBron. He won't shut him down, but he'll give him fits.
Anyway. The one other point about the Lakers I just want to make is what happens with Derek Fisher when the playoffs come? Because every year the Lakers go into the playoffs, and every year I say the one weakness they have is that point guard. They need to upgrade this in the offseason, and here's Derek Fisher again making big plays, making big shots. What's going on?
He's just a reflection of the rest of the team. Like Whereas the rest of the team is super talented and they turn it on when the playoffs start, he's not super talented anymore. He is getting up there in age, and just the light turns on. He has that same DNA that Robert Horry has, and he's a big game player, and he's one of the main reasons that they've been so good. He's just a stabilizing force on the court, and it's it's a great thing to see if you're a fan of the NBA. If not, if you're not a Lakers fan, but he is a stabilizing force, and it's a wonderful thing to see every year.
And then I guess we'll flip the script, and this series may be over by the time you're listening to this, but for the record, no team has ever come back from 3-0 down. For this series, have you been surprised with how the Suns have played against a San Antonio team that a lot of people, when they beat Dallas, took that to mean something? I didn't, because, you know what? Dallas chokes in the playoffs. That's what they do.
You know, I'm not going to lie. I was one of those people. I thought, you know, Dallas this year was a little different. They had Caron Butler. They added Brendan Haywood. They added a little toughness. And I thought, you know, I didn't think they were going to go all the way, but I thought this was a year where they'd compete again. But the fact that San Antonio got by them, I thought, I picked the Spurs to beat the Suns in six. I thought the Suns were going to have to squeeze out two wins. And I thought I grossly overestimated the Spurs this year, or at least in this round. And yeah, I'm disappointed with the results in terms of, because I wanted to see a more competitive series, but I'm definitely happy as a Canadian because I definitely want to see Steve Nash in the next round and see how we can fare against Kobe and the Lakers.
Well, you know, Matt Bonner's going to be a Canadian soon too. What, you have no love for Matt Bonner?
He's got a ring, doesn't he?
That's true, he does.
That's enough. It's not a just world when Matt Bonner is going to get a Canadian citizenship before Steve Nash has a championship.
And I was actually joking around that it we'll talk about the Raptors in a bit, but if the Raptors were to, say, lose both Chris Bosh and Amir Johnson, they could sign Bonner, and he could show them what a championship ring looks like.
Oh, that might be the direction we're headed in, eh? Trading for Matt Bonner. Is he up for an extension this year?
No, he's a free agent, so Matt Bonner has to get a contract so he can play for Canada, because Canada needs him.
I'm glad he's going to play for Team Canada, but I don't want to see him back in a Toronto Raptors uniform if it means losing Amir and Chris.
But, yeah, that's true. I agree with that part, but, you know, he actually does drive a car now, so he could actually get around.
A Grand Prix, he'll get it shipped over from San Antonio.
Yeah, Matt Bonner, you know, he's a funny cat, and he married Canadian, so there's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, he works on all levels. And the fact that he rode the TTC and for the longest time as an NBA player, it speaks to his character and his humble approach to everything in life. So it would be great to have him back. Maybe not as a starter, though.
No, just he would be that kind of feel-good PR move, because everybody loves Matt Bonner.
Yes, he'd be this year's version of Rashaan Ostarevich.
Exactly. That's exactly what he would be, although that didn't work out so well with Rasho. So no. One last thing before we leave the NBA playoffs and all the NBA talk. And then this actually isn't an NBA playoffs question necessarily, but the Phoenix Suns, they came out and they wore the Lost Suns uniforms.
Yes.
Based on the whole immigration fuss going on there in Arizona. Yes. What do you think about that? I mean, they are on the right side of the issue, I think most people would agree. But should sports teams be making those kind of statements? Because it could go the other way, where a sports team could, like, support something that most people didn't like. And is this a bad precedent?
You know what? I'd have to disagree. I love it. You know, I feel sports is one of the – it's kind of – a lot of times it should reflect the current political situation. I mean, normally it is a player that is outspoken, not necessarily an entire franchise. But I appreciate the fact that the Phoenix Suns supported Steve Nash, because I know he was one of the first people to actually say something about it, speak up against it. And the fact that an entire franchise recognizes the fact that there is injustice going on in their home state, I appreciated it as a Canadian. And I would love to see more of that in sports. Hopefully, like you said, it didn't work the opposite way. But I was reading an interesting article a few days ago, and the fact that it was talking about different political moments in all the sports. And the fact that Carlos Delgado, you know, he sat out. He didn't. If you recall, he refused to stand up for the Star Spangled Banner. And the fact that stuff like that, whether you agree with an athlete or not, I always appreciate an athlete speaking up politically, because I feel that in this day and age, they're so concerned with endorsements and whatnot that they kind of gag themselves and they don't speak up when oftentimes they have the biggest platform to speak.
And is this kind of a product too of Obama, because you had LeBron James going out there campaigning for Obama. You had a number of superstar NBA players out there basically campaigning for Obama, and it's a different world than from when I grew up, because I'm a little bit older than you, and you'd never think of an athlete doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's a good sign. Maybe it's a way where athletes, it'll be the in thing to do to speak up, because again, as I said, they have that platform, and you know, younger people look up to them because they follow their dreams, and the fact that they're not going to gag themselves, and there will be times where people disagree with them, but let's face it, they do have a giant platform, and a guy like Steve Nash, he could be a trailblazer in that. It's just that he's never been, he's always been outspoken, I should say, and the fact that the trend might be leaning towards speaking up when you see something that's wrong, and it extends to different points of life. Like, they're sending a message to the kids that if you see something that's wrong, you speak up, no matter how it's gonna look against you, you know? You speak up when you see something that's wrong. And I think it's a great thing. I think sports definitely should. If you, I don't know if you're a fan of Dave Zirin. He writes for Slam Magazine. He has a column there that's called Louder Than a Bomb, and he has a website, edgeofsports.com. There's a plug. But he's definitely one of those writers that speaks about sports and politics, and the fact that oftentimes they are in the same arena.